Good evening, everyone on Instagram. We'll just wait for a few of you to come on. And we're really happy to be with you this evening for another session of questions and answers. Thank you for joining. There's 13 of you online. Sharma, Perna, Shreya. Welcome to everyone. Hope everyone's feeling warm. The temperatures are really dropping. I don't know where in the world you are. Maybe shout out to us where in the world you're coming from or which city. I am currently in Leeds. When I was a kid, I used to support Leeds United football team. That's a fun fact if you're interested. So here I am in Leeds, and we've had some wonderful days here. We've been to York, Sheffield, Leeds, Lincoln, meeting the people. Italy, oh wonderful. Elfie, nice to meet. I'm sure it's not as cold in Italy as it is here. Berlin, Lake Ashravanti, East London, Dhruva Maharaj. Sorry about that. I'm sure it's not that bad. Germany, Kent, exotic Hammersmith, wow, amazing. New Govardhan, wow, it's definitely not cold there. Australia, USA, Roops, thank you for your message, is wonderful. Ilford, is that Golok or Golok? Golok is in Sanskrit, the spiritual world. Amazing. Minus 15 in Sweden. Oh my God. That is intense. We know to avoid Sweden in December for sure. Delhi, thank you so much. Marimango, Leicester. Excellent. Dallas, Texas. Wonderful. Wow, this is wonderful. Like, we're connecting with everyone. It's great to be with you all. And I just wanted to say thank you for all your messages and all your inputs. I got so many messages from all of you and inquiries and appreciations. Gratitude is such an amazing thing. I feel like in my life, so many people encouraged me and so many people gave me words of support. And I'm really built on that. And I think when we create a community of love in which we encourage each other, then everyone thrives to their potential. So thank you so much. Calgary, Canada. No snow in Florida. Alachua. Yes, I want to come. Next year, I'm hopefully going to be coming to America. I want to do America is a place of pilgrimage for the Hare Krishnas, because that's where Srila Prabhupada, our founder, begun it all in New York City. And here we are in the cold, and we're remembering Srila Prabhupada, who in 1965 arrived in America, and it was actually the coldest winter recorded in New York history. And there he was, a Calcutta boy who was in New York in the cold of the winter, all alone, sharing spirituality, spiritual love with everyone. So in these cold days, we remember his sacrifices and realize how hard it must have been and how much he was driven by love. So thank you everyone for joining. And today we're kind of going to do something a little bit different. In the previous weeks, I've been sharing with you some of my lessons from the road. I've been sharing with you some of my mistakes that I felt I made in my life. We're all human. We all make mistakes. And what I learned from them. And I hope that was useful for you. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity, because it really gave me the opportunity to reflect. So it was really nice. And today I thought we could just take a session to digest it all and to see whether you may have any questions you'd like to ask, or you have any reflections of your own. So I am going to... Just to say, before I carry on, there's like a technical announcement. Apparently on Instagram, there's like a question thing. And I think it's this icon on the bottom. I'm kind of scared to touch it, because like these gadgets tend to self-destruct. But I think there is a question. So yeah, maybe you can put your questions either in the comments or in that question thing. And then I'll try to... Here, let me just press it and see what happens. Okay, there's no questions yet, but there is a questions thing there. I don't know how you do it. You guys are better than me. So you can put it on there. Otherwise, put it on the comments and I will follow it up. So yeah, start putting your questions. I did get a bunch of questions. I got my phone here and I got a few questions that had come. So I'm just going to kind of start diving into some of the questions that some of you had asked. And let's see where we go. I'm going to start with a question, which is an interesting one. About a week or two ago, I wrote a blog called Resensitize. And I was talking about how most people in this world are apathetic. We tend to get into this state of apathy where people around us are suffering, but we don't even see it. And then I was talking about how a step higher than that is sympathy, that we see people are suffering, but we feel sorry from a distance, and we learn to just shut it out and live with it. And then I was saying how a real spiritualist has to resensitize themselves and ultimately come to the stage of empathy, where we see the suffering around us and we feel it so much that we feel impelled to assist, to act, to help. And so the first question came in from Ryan, and Ryan said, you talked about apathy and you talked about sympathy and how ultimately we have to embody empathy, but how can we embody empathy in a sustainable way? Yes, because there's so much suffering around us, people with so many problems. And if we start to take all the weight of the world on our shoulders, how much can we actually survive? In the blog post, I did mention that self-care and self-compassion is the foundation of empathy. When we're strong, when we're inspired, when we have nourishment and fulfillment within ourselves, then we can really go out and really assist others. And so we have to be caring to ourselves. We have to be compassionate to ourselves. But we have to realize that's not the end. That's not the goal. The goal is to make a beautiful contribution to other people's lives and a beautiful contribution to the world. So the first thing I would say, Ryan, is start helping people one at a time. And see how you draw energy from being loving. See how you draw energy from being compassionate. When we do it in the right way, then being loving and compassionate, being a servant of others, should actually energize us. It doesn't need to be a draining thing. So do it in a sustainable way. Do it in a systematic way. And empathy really is just about being conscious of everyone around us and what they've contributed to. Someone once taught me the five-finger prayer. Do you guys know the five-finger prayer? We have five fingers. So they said every day we should be conscious of the five. We should pray to the five. Who are the five? The first we should pray to, the thumb. The thumb represents those who are closest to you, the pillars in your life, the loved ones, the ones who have been with you through thick and thin. They're the first people you should be conscious of and sensitive to, the first ones you should pray for. And he says the first finger represents your teachers, those in your life who taught you many things, who trained you, who gave you good wisdom, who gave you good direction and advice. The third, the tallest one, the tallest finger, are the leaders in your life, those people who took responsibility, those people who made a sacrifice, those people who whose shoulders you stand on because they created a future for you, the leaders in your life. The third finger is the kind of weak finger, and that represents the people around you who are vulnerable, the people around you who need help. The people around you who are struggling. And the fifth finger, the small one, represents yourself. So the five-finger prayer, these are the five people we should always be conscious of. the loved ones, the teachers, the leaders, the vulnerable, and yourself. And when we start, actually, I found it was very, very nice, actually, because it helps you to begin being really conscious about everyone around you. And, you know, sometimes we have a saying, you can't become Krishna conscious unless you're first conscious. So being empathetic, being conscious, being sensitive, being aware of other people, their struggles, their emotions, that's really the first step in spiritual life. And so Ryan, let's just do it in a systematic way, in a sustainable way, and you'll see amazing things happen through empathy. So thank you so much. So many of you are joining. There's about 70 of you online. Thank you very, very much, Kishan, Jeff. Really great to see you all. So yeah, do put the questions. All right, there's 7 questions there now. Oh my God. All right, so I'm going to start going to the questions. But before that, I do have some questions here that I need to answer, because they came in. So let me start answering some of those. Another question came in from Sam. I'm not sure whether Sam is a he or a she. We'll just say Sam. Well, we're all spirit souls ultimately. Sam said, thank you for your post, Prisoner of the Past. I found it really amazing how we can be a prisoner of not just a bad past, but a prisoner of a good past. How we can be prisoners of nostalgia. And Sam was just appreciating how we can become a prisoner of the past in terms of just remembering the good times and living in the good old times, but not realizing that there are greater times also to come as well. And yeah, I wanted to share that with everyone, that sometimes we become prisoners even of sweet memories, prisoners of very nice times gone by in our life, and we continually reminisce and we continually absorb ourselves in that past, and we feel like it's never going to be like that again. I don't know how I can move on. I wish I could turn back the clock. And we just become like full of nostalgia. But that can also block us in our life, because we can appreciate times gone by were amazing. But the future of your life is also amazing. And more amazing things will be built upon the amazing things you experienced in the past. And so I just want to share with you also, there's a psychological principle called the peak end principle. I don't know how many of you know about this. But psychologists say when we tend to look at our past or a past, you know, period in our life, we tend to only remember the peak emotions of that period, and we tend to only remember the final emotion of the period, but we don't actually remember the majority of the experience of that period. So that's why sometimes we can have also a skewed image of the past. Like we have this really romantic idea of the past, like it was amazing, it was so good, it was like everything was perfect. But we tend to only remember like the peak emotions and the end emotion. But there might have been like a lot of struggle. There might have been a lot of difficulty. There might have been a lot of times in that period where you thought like, I just want to move on in my life. So sometimes we also, our image of the past and our recollections of the past are also not necessarily accurate. And so, yeah, let us not live in the past. I was saying this, and I think they put it on the Insta today. To think of the past is natural. To think of the past is also good. We need to learn from the past. But don't live in the past. Don't become a prisoner of the past. Learn to digest all of those experiences of the past, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and move on, rise up, grow, evolve, progress. And find out the amazing things that life has in store for you. Life is unfolding here and now. The good old times are now. And that's what we really have to do. So yeah, thank you, Sam, for that. I'm just conscious. There's so many questions, and then you guys are putting questions on the thing. Let me just do a couple of other questions from here that came in. This one, I'm not sure. I think this is Roshni. Roshni says, you talk about wisdom that breathes. Thank you for recognizing that. You talk about wisdom that breathes. But I find that sometimes we need to disconnect from wisdom and just be. Because spirituality is not about knowledge. Spirituality is about the heart. What do you think about this? Thank you so much, Roshni. Yeah, I really appreciate your question. Well, Roshni, here's what I would say. There's two ways you can get blinded. One, when there's no light. Two, when there's too much light. Have you ever tried looking into the sun? It's like it's another blinding thing. So I think wisdom is like that. If you don't have any wisdom in your life, you're blinded. But if you have so much overload of informational wisdom that you don't digest and you don't apply and you don't embed in a deep space within your consciousness, then all of that informational wisdom, you can actually drown in it. And so, that's exactly why I talk about wisdom that breathes. Because we're not here just to be repositories of information. We're not here just to memorize loads of facts and figures and stories and, you know, accounts and passages of scripture. We're here to actually really deeply absorb that wisdom, to understand that this wisdom is living, to understand how it applies to my life, to let that wisdom touch your heart, to let that wisdom guide your consciousness, to see divinity speaking to you through that wisdom. And I think when you interact with wisdom in that way, then you'll never be overloaded, and it will always nourish your heart. When we give wisdom, you know, it's not that through wisdom, the purpose of studying all this wisdom is to know God. No. The purpose of all of this wisdom is to love God. We're not in the business of trying to know the entirety of divinity, but we're in the business of trying to become captured in heart and mind and soul in a beautiful relationship with divinity. And that's what wisdom is for. So I appreciate your observation that, yeah, wisdom and knowledge is there, but it must be couched within a very reflective, sincere spiritual heart that tries to bring that wisdom alive. Otherwise, it just feels very intellectual and very dry. And it can make you proud, and it can make you insensitive. Knowledge can actually be misused as well. So yes, thank you. Therefore, our monastery where we live is known as Bhakti Vedanta Manor. And when new people come, I ask them, are you a person of the head or the heart? And some people are like, I'm head. Some people are like, I'm heart. And I'm like, Bhakti Vedanta. This is the place where the head and the heart meet. Because Bhakti means devotion or love, the heart. And Vedanta means wisdom, insight, the head. And spirituality is Bhakti Vedanta. It's where knowledge and devotion meet. And that's what we're in the business of. So thank you so much. Thank you everyone for joining. Saloni, nice to see you. Thank you for joining. Saloni was in at the Westminster program with us in the Houses of Parliament, and she was an incredible MC. So thank you so much. Hari Leela, Neera, Divya, so many amazing souls here, thank you. Alright, so let me start going on to some of your questions, because I asked you to to put your questions and I'm not really answering them, so here we go. Okay, the real Shani. Thank you for your question. I'm new to Bhakti, not part of a temple or community, how to find a guru for guidance? Such a great question. Thank you. Thank you for being part of the Bhakti community. Well, here you are. You're part of a community right here. We're all here together, learning, growing, inspiring each other. So never feel like you're alone. We're all here together. And, you know, what I would say is that for all the bad press that technology gets nowadays, like it's ruining our kids, it's making our relationships impersonal, it's destroying our world in so many ways. We can also see that technology allows us to be really, really connected with others. So what I would say is the first thing is if you can't get to a physical place, a community where you can be with other spiritual people in person, just connect like this, like you're coming on tonight. And try to see whether, along with spiritual company in a bigger forum like this, like, okay, there's like, you know, 70, 80, 90 of us online. But along with this, try to see if you can connect online with smaller groups, 5, 10, even individual people who are on this spiritual path. And there are different types of gurus. So the first types of gurus are known as Shiksha gurus, and they are just people who are on the path, just like you. And they may be a few steps ahead of you, and they can help you. And they can be your friends. They can be like your bigger brother or your bigger sister, and they can take you forward. And then there is something called a Diksha guru, who is someone who's more prominent in your lives, maybe someone who's quite accomplished in their practice of spirituality, who then formally becomes your teacher, a mouthpiece through whom you connect with divinity. And that can happen at some point in the future. Maybe one time we'll do a live on that. I think one time we should do a live on gurus and what that relationship is and how to navigate it. And then, you know, the other thing I would say is that there are gurus all around you as well. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of our famous books, there's one brahmana, one spiritualist who's clearly very accomplished. And someone asked him, how did you become so accomplished? He said, I've got 24 gurus. He said, 24? Who are your 24 gurus? He says, the ocean is my guru. The trees are my guru. The wind is my guru. The birds are my guru. Like he just looks around and he gets lessons from everything. So like that. And then there is Krishna in your heart, who is also an inner guide, an inner guru, sometimes what we call the intuition. So you're never alone, the Rioshani, you're never alone. There's going to be many people to help you on this journey. And the one last thing I also want to say to you is that when we sincerely desire help, when we open our hearts and we request guidance on the spiritual path, then just wait and see how Providence makes arrangements and sends people in your life to help. It will happen, no doubt about it. So thank you. It's a beautiful question. I really, really appreciate it. Really appreciate that. Okay, let me see now. Ramya Raj, I think it is. Hare Krishna, what does it mean to chant with absorption? Any tips to develop this mood and move away from the mechanical mode to complete 16 rounds? Chanting is a conversation with God. Chanting is perhaps the most important activity that you do in the day. They say the way you chant is a barometer of your spiritual vibrancy. And so we are trying to chant. Firstly, on a practical level, we try to make all the arrangements so that we have the best chance to connect. So on a practical level, wake up early. Be in a suitable environment in which you won't be disturbed. your posture, sit up straight, be physically recharged. So like this, you make practical arrangements, so at least on a physical level, you have the best chance to be attentive. And then what you do is, on a mental level, you have to try to fix your mind. You have to try to calm the mind. In those moments when you sit down to meditate, 1,000 thoughts go through the mind, and you have to just say to your mind, I'll deal with it, but after 2 hours. I'll deal with it, I'll come back to it, but just give me some time. And somehow or other, that stream of thoughts, you have to, instead of identifying with the mind, you have to identify the mind and not take those thoughts too seriously. Resist the temptation to surf the waves of the thoughts that come through your consciousness, and just be attentive. Close your eyes and just try to be in the present and say, I know everything will be there after 2 hours, but if I can just focus on the mantra in these 2 hours, after 2 hours, the whole world will look different. And then the third thing is, on the soul level, you have to bring in your heart. On the physical level, you make all the arrangements. On the mental level, you bring your full attention. But then on the heart level, you try to actually produce the cry of the soul. Do you know? Everyone is crying in this world for something. And most people are crying out of frustration because all their material dreams never manifested. Madhvacharya says, if you gather all the tears that the conditioned soul has shed for many, many lifetimes, then it will be enough to fill oceans. So we're crying. Everyone's crying. But now when we chant, we cry. But we're not cries of emotions, cries of the soul. A cry from the heart to really want to be connected. As George Harrison says, I really want to see you. I really want to see you. But it takes so long. And so when we cry from the heart and bring some emotion into our chanting, then just as a parent immediately recognizes a child that's crying, we immediately feel a divine communion. So this is the process of chanting with absorption. It's not easy. Every day is a challenge. Some days you connect. Some days you feel very distant. But you keep trying. You keep praying. And what you do in the 22 hours outside of your meditation also determines what will happen in those 2 hours. So in this way, chanting is a great art. I've given you some ideas here. The questions you all are asking deserve a whole session, but alas, no time. So thank you Ramya Raj for your question. I hope I'm saying everyone's name right. It's very difficult. Okay, I'm just trying to pick up some questions here. I'm going random, so if I miss your question, please don't get offended. I'm just trying to get a random kind of cross section of questions here. So yes, let me go. Okay, so Sash Polan is asking, how do I maintain my spiritual practice in the midst of so many responsibilities, even when my family are not very favorable? Everyone around us is put there for a reason. Even when there are people around us who are not supportive, people around us who challenge, criticize, are negative, people around us who would prefer we don't go on the spiritual journey, we have to see that even they are there, arranged by providence. Sometimes our biggest critics, sometimes our biggest opposition, they are the ones who actually trigger the greatest development within us. As long as we respond to their criticism, we respond to their opposition with grace, with resilience. We don't react being discouraged, or we don't react by becoming defensive, but rather we learn how to hear them, hear their heart, hear their frustration, and ultimately respond in an appropriate way that pacifies them but allows us to continue growing. It's a great art of life. We're not living in a vacuum. And therefore there will always be opposition around us. But that opposition is good. You know, there was a caterpillar that was in a cocoon. And it was struggling and struggling because caterpillars grow into butterflies. So as a butterfly, it was struggling and struggling to come out of the cocoon. Breaking, trying to break out. Big struggle. And then one compassionate person came along and saw the struggle and he thought, let me help. And so with a sharp instrument, he just cut the cocoon open so that the butterfly could come out. And as the butterfly came out, it began flying. And after 15 seconds, it fell and died. It was agonizing. And then the person realized it was nature's arrangement. It was nature's arrangement that that butterfly had to go through the struggle of breaking out of that cocoon. Because by breaking out of that cocoon in that way and going through that rite of passage, it would develop the strength in its wings to fly high in the sky. You have to understand that all of these challenges are part of a bigger growth that makes you, that will make you who you really can be. When I became a monk, there were many, many challenges in making that step. And all of my fellow monks at that time who joined the monastery at the same time, none of them had the same problems as me. And I thought, why me? Everyone else has got a great path ahead, no resistance. Why me? And I tell you, now I look back and I'm so grateful that I had to go through all of those struggles because it made me deepen my spirituality in a way that I would never have done of my own volition and motivation. And so please, 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 learn this great art. And I know you hear it on every Facebook video, every IG short, every reel, every motivational speaker telling you to turn your challenges into opportunities. This is life. You have to learn to do this. Because otherwise, we're not going to grow. So, there you go. Some thoughts. I hope it helps. And keep us posted. We're here to help with your journey as well. Thank you so much. So many of you are joining. It's like amazing. We see all these names coming off on the screen, and it's like all these old friends and people I know from across the world. So thank you. I really appreciate all of you taking the time. Okay, Vrajadipika, I just seen your question, so here, let's dive in and see what you're asking. What do we do when we're in a vulnerable situation and there's a need to speak to someone who can hear you without judgment? Vrajadipika, I want to share something with you that in my life, I was never looking for relationships. When I became a monk, I was like, I wanted to walk away from the world and all relationships. I became a monk to become socially dead. And then I joined the Hare Krishna monastery, and every other class was about building relationships. And I was like, I don't want to have relationships. I just want to be me and God and keep it simple. as years went by in my life, I realize, and I realize this in my life today more than any other time in my spiritual trajectory, that the most valuable thing I have in my life is relationships with other spiritualists. And that's coming from someone who didn't want to have any relationships. And my other realization with that is that relationships require investment. Radhadeepika, you have to invest in your relationships with others. That means you have to spend time with them. You have to open your heart to them. You have to hear them and help them. You have to serve each other. You have to be together and do amazing things to make a contribution to other people's lives, a contribution to making the world a better place. When you serve together, when you sing together, when you study wisdom together, when you sit and eat together, you'll find you develop beautiful relationships. And that will define your spiritual life. We're all going to come to a point in our life when we need to speak to someone and be open and be honest. We're humans, we slip up, we make mistakes, we have good days where we're enthused and other days where we feel like, I don't know if I can carry on. And we need to have good people we can speak to. But you'll only have that if you made an investment. And so nowadays, I do things which are not so practical in terms of effectiveness or productivity or like, you know, but I do it because of relationship. Because I realize that's more important, that that's going to be the wealth. And I'll share with you just, you know, coming up to six months ago that I took my, I took these vows of lifetime renunciation. And it's a big step. And I thought, how am I going to do it? How am I going to maintain it? And what's helped me and continues to help me is the love, the encouragement, the relationships of all these amazing people in my life who support me. And I feel so grateful for that. So please invest in that. All of us should do that. Really invest in your relationships with others. And then you'll have many people to go to. Many people. Well, you won't even have to go to them. They'll be there. They'll be there, right there with you. Through your journey. I hope that helps. All right, it's great to see you all. We're like 80, 90 of us on the call. It's so nice. This is great. Instagram Live. Here we are. Okay, if anyone's really, really like wants to ask a question, then please do. Otherwise, here, let me pick up one. From Vimal, Guru V IT support. I have a question about being comfortable with the uncomfortable. All right, what's your question? I find having cold showers in the morning help me win the morning and therefore deal with the discomfort of the day. Would you recommend any other practices that help you with being comfortable with the uncomfortable? See, the thing is, uncomfortable things, you can't make uncomfortable things comfortable, because if you made them comfortable, they wouldn't be uncomfortable anymore, and then you'd throw out of the window the concept of being comfortable with the uncomfortable. There are some things that will remain uncomfortable in our life. But what I'm saying is that we should train our mind to not just run away from discomfort. We should train our mind not to resist austerity or difficulty. We should train our mind to respond to challenge and adversity in a different way. we should try to frame all of this through spiritual wisdom. And it's a fact. If I look in my life, the things I resisted the most, the things I really didn't want to do, the things I was ready to run away from, were ultimately the things that brought me the greatest growth. And when I think about that to this day, it sends chills down my spine. Because I realize that if I want to experience the totality of what life can be, then it means in the future there's going to be plenty more situations where I'm faced with things I don't want to do, people I don't want to be with. I'm going to be faced with all these things, and then I'm going to have a decision in the future. So it's not that in the future it's all of a sudden going to be comfortable. It's going to remain uncomfortable. That's the whole point. But I'm going to be able to look at it and see it. So what would I say to you, Vimal? Look back in your life and think. We have to really look back in our life and digest experiences. Life is the best teacher. Each one of us on this call have gone through so many life experiences. You've gone through the school of hard knocks. So we have to think back in our life and think deeply. What did I learn? And how can I internalize that lesson to move forward? And if you look back, I can guarantee you, one of the lessons of your life will be the most uncomfortable things that you confronted were often the things that gave you the most growth. True or not? True. I'm sure it's true. So, yeah, let's just try and be positive, move forward, and just keep mining for jewels. As I was saying that, I was just scrolling through, and then I saw my good friend Rasika Rai, whose Instagram name is Mining for Jewels. So yeah, mine for the jewels. And the jewels are in the scriptures, but the jewels are also sometimes in the struggle of life. In the hard struggle for existence in life, you can find great beauty. You can find and uncover beautiful lessons, beautiful growth. Don't underestimate. Okay, I'm going to do one more question. Let's see which question to answer here. So many good questions. Alright, here's a good one. Someone's asking me, Keshava Swami, would you recommend I read self-development books to help me in my spiritual journey? Thank you, that's a great question. Going into Waterstones and seeing what people are writing about and browsing through the self-development section is one of my favorite things to do. There you go, confession. The Power of Now, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, The Alchemist, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, The Secret, Atomic Habits, Think Like a Monk. All these amazing books, huh? This is what I would say. Self-help. It's interesting, actually. Self-help. I find a lot of books can give you help, but they don't have so much self. They don't have so much knowledge, deep spiritual insight into the nature of who we are, what this world is, where we came from, whether we're connected to a supreme divinity. When it comes to self-help, some books have a lot of help, practical advice, but they may not have so much soul, so much self. I find some books have deep understanding of the self, the soul, but they may not necessarily unpack it in a way to give much help, practical help. And therefore, people tend to kind of make this go to like some books for self, to deep theology, and then go other places for help, and then come back for some self, and then go here for help. Self, help, self, help. What I want to say to you is that the Bhagavad Gita has the ultimate knowledge of the self, and also zipped there, waiting to be uncovered, the most practical help for you to develop yourself in the deepest, most sustainable way possible. My firm conviction is that self-development without spiritual development breaks down. Self-development without spiritual development is neither comprehensive, deep, nor sustainable. And so, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's all worthless. Of course, there is great help that you can find everywhere. Of course, there are great insights that everyone has uncovered, for sure. Why not? And we can read that. It's possible, yes. And whatever helps. But ultimately, self-development without spiritual development breaks down. And so we have to deeply experience a transformation on a deeper level. And then the self-development can really occur in a profound way. And so there you go. These are just some thoughts on self-development. And we have to learn from everyone. Everyone has insights. And when I read books, you know, like, well, these books, it's amazing. They have such parallels to spiritual literature. We're not in a competition here. It's not like this against that. Or, you know, should I read this or that? I think we have to find the good everywhere. But I do believe that the Bhagavad Gita... Here you go, guys. I'll just share my heart with you. I'm on a mission. I'm not much of a missionary, but I'm trying my best. I'm on a mission to try to share with the world that everything you need, from religion to relationships, from science to sociology, from lifestyle to leadership, all the keys to life, the universe, and everything can be found in the Bhagavad Gita. I feel I'm convinced about that. And so that's what we're trying to do, unqualified as we are. This is wisdom that breathes. So thank you so much. I'm going over time. I'm waffling now. It's 8:49. So many more questions. Radha, I saw you posted a question. Sagar. Sagar is saying, please bless me so that I can become Krishna conscious. Well, Sagar, you please bless me that I can become Krishna conscious, and maybe we can bless each other. We're all on the journey together. Thank you so much for joining. It's been amazing. There's 90 of you online, and I really appreciate all of you taking the time. We'll be back soon. What's happening in the next week? If the car starts tomorrow in this cold weather, hopefully the car will start. If the car starts, then we'll be heading back down towards London. We'll be kind of in London and the surrounding areas over the weekend. We're going for a beautiful retreat in Lincoln. Maybe some of you on the call will join. We're going to be with a wonderful, wonderful spiritual leader, Sachinandana Swami, who has such a heart of gold. And so we'll be bathing in his association and his spiritual company. And then next week we'll be doing a final whiz around the country, East Anglia. Haven't been to Norwich, King's Lynn, Bury St. Edmunds, Great Yarmouth, Ipswich for a long time. So we're going to try and go to those areas. And then heading back to Bhaktivedanta Manor, the place of the head and heart, for Christmas. And then gearing up for 2023. So much to discover, onwards and upwards. Let us not become prisoners of the past. A good past, a difficult past. But let us move forward and find beauty in the life that's yet to unfold. So with that, I'll sign out. Thank you, everyone. You're all amazing people, and we hope to connect in person very, very soon. And just had a great time being with you this evening. Signing out from Leeds, sweet dreams, spiritual magic, all success, strength, and discovery. And we'll definitely continue to connect in the coming days and weeks. All the best.